There's been an awful lot of focus on serving a certain percentage of students. Oh, we serve the top X percent. But what about serving the top 100%? Who are those institutions that are serving the top 100%? Well, it's a traditional two-year model, the community colleges. And the community college is one of the most fertile grounds of thinking outside the box, of innovating. Today, on the FutureX podcast, we welcome back Chancellor Stephen Gonzalez as we discuss serving the top 100%. Let's go to Matt.
I'm going to ask Michael. He had a question in terms of, you know, the different influences of other institutions. Michael, do you want to ask your question to Dr. Gonzalez?
Sure, Dr. Gonzalez. Grateful to have you here. It's wonderful. I was wondering, I'd love to hear your perspective or of the influence the folks in your neighborhood, the University of Phoenix, Grand Canyon University, or just the general for-profit model has had on maybe your institution or just the traditional liberal arts schools, community colleges, in a good way. What comes to mind is the value of having robust student services kind of thing, the value of that. I'd love to hear your perspective if you're willing to do that. Thank you.
Sure, Michael, that's a great question. So having organizations like the University of Phoenix, which at one time I think was considered to be the largest organization in higher ed, and I think at one time boasting over 300,000 students across the world, and Grand Canyon University being in the backyard, a for-profit, a Christian-based organization that suddenly grew from just a few thousand students to nearly 25 to 30,000 students today, seemingly overnight. And then we also have another big dog that I can see from my office window is Arizona State University, who for the last 4 or 5 years in a row has been considered the most innovative university in the country, with universities like MIT and Stanford and others trailing behind them. So there is stiff competition to excel here. Sometimes we wish we could be in a different place where we didn't have to worry about that competition, but I fully recognize that, it's like a stone sharpening the sword. If they're not there, in some ways, it's not helping us become better as well. I think a lot of the innovation that we've seen and the changes that we've done and the constant asking ourselves how we can be better has to do with the fact that UFP is here, GCU and AC and ASU are here as well. I sit on a commission for post-secondary education here in the state of Arizona, and there was a gentleman when I joined who was representing a private interest in our state, and I thought maybe there was 20 to 30 private colleges and organizations that he was representing, but it ended up being closer to 150, over 200, nearly 250, which just blew me away. And that meeting, ironically, was taking place at GCU that day. And in driving back to my campus, which was about maybe 10 miles away, I began to count the number of smaller organizations that we compete with that have niche programs like a nursing college, and that's their sole focus, or an automotive program, and that's their sole focus, HVAC program, and that's their sole focus. I have all of those programs, but we're competing with those folks, and they pour much more money into their marketing, and they have more robust student services than we have. This was a timely conversation, Michael. We were just having it yesterday with some of my cabinet members to say to solve some of the enrollment issues that we're having. We think we're beginning to try to figure out where that bottleneck occurs, and we're learning that we just simply need more boots on the ground. We probably have, on average, about an 800 or 900 to 1 ratio across our district. Some colleges might be better. That ratio that I'm talking about is student to advisor. You take a University of Phoenix, you take a GCU, it's probably closer to a 200 to 300 to 1. So that student is being, I'm not going to say better served, but I'm going to say they probably have better access to their student advisor than someone in our institution. So we've got to figure out a way to do that. I don't have the resources to go and hire 1,000 more advisors to change that ratio, but I'm working really closely with my chief information officer to say what technologies exist out there to assist our advisors, and more of that artificial intelligence behind the scenes going on that can interact with our students at various levels, so that it appears, not only that it appears, but so that students know that they've got someone or something that is serving them every step of the way. That's the only way we're going to be able to compete with these other organizations.
I love that point about using technology to fill real gaps rather than assuming that technology is just going to fix problems wholesale. And using that to help better serve your students brings up a really nice point that you just made about having a niche, right? So I think you acknowledge the competitive advantage of serving only one kind of student for one kind of job. I'm wondering what you see as sort of your ideal student, not the one that you want to have, but what is the customer persona you guys are serving with the community college? I imagine there's a huge diversity, but do you have something that you can kind of rally your strategy around when you think about that kind of student orientation?
Great question, Christina. So, you know, I think as an educator, we all dream of the ideal student. That would be the one who comes prepared, is ready to excel, that has 1,000 questions for you every day in class, and requires very little support to be successful. But the reality is, and by the way, I understand this reality that we're in, and I've chosen to work in this space, and I love working in this space because in our world, the community and college world, we are fortunate to work with, as I heard a chancellor say yesterday, the top 100%. So we don't focus on the top 5 or top 10%. Our focus is the top 100%. And given our low cost and our physical location throughout this county, that top 100% means that we get a plethora of students who come prepared in different ways. Some are college ready, some aren't. Some are economically ready, most aren't. Most are first generation students. They come with a lot of the challenges that chip away at their odds of being successful. So a few years back at Gateway, after just being really frustrated with hearing some of our employees saying, you know, we wish students would arrive this way, we wish students would do this, why can't K-12 do this? To say, look, guys, we've got to stop thinking about it. There's nothing that we can control and do that's going to change how our students arrive. And rather than wishing away, why don't we begin to think about meeting students where they are? And that requires us to be better servants to the students rather than the complainer of what they come or don't come with. Once people start to look at it that way, you really see a light bulb go on, and a mentality switch in these people, and they begin to do their work differently. I saw it happen there at Gateway, and I'm trying to help that across this larger system. It's a little tougher to do that across 10 colleges, especially during this pandemic. That's really affected my ability to lead how I would normally lead. So I've had to rethink, how do I make those philosophies still happen across the system, doing this mostly from the office in my house?
I love that as a response. It's such an important, powerful kind of mental model to shift to people, which is not they're coming here because of us, but we're here for them. I think Dr. O wanted to jump in here. Dr. Kathy?
Sure. I was talking to Matt in the back channel. Matt, do you want me to wait or jump in here?
No, go ahead and jump.
I actually didn't have a question. I wanted to just weigh in on what Stephen is saying. I've done a lot of work with the teacher ed programs across Arizona and the K-12 center. I don't know, Stephen, if you know Dr. Kathy Webke or not, but what Arizona has been very progressive about that helps us get to where we are in the ed tech conversation is what you said about community colleges. And I think for a long time, we've had it wrong in that we looked at the four-year colleges as more progressive and more necessary, and the community colleges almost as remediation for those who didn't do well on the K-12 spectrum. But when we look at all of P16 from pre-kindergarten to the senior year in college, we realize now community colleges had it right all the time. So I do think for where science and technology is going, we do need to start thinking in the high school years about where students want to go, what they want to do, what they need to know about what they're interested in, so that they can go directly into a nursing, like you mentioned, Stephen, or into mechanics or into aviation, or even at this point now, really into technology design and more STEM and scientific discovery. So when I was flashing my mic, I was clapping my hands at several things that you are saying. I think that that's the right direction and we have to get really serious about it. And I agree. I don't think the conversation is as much about fixing K-12 as it is using technology to push K-12 into where the future is going. Thank you for this space.
You're welcome. Thank you. And one of the exciting things, as you probably know, since you're here, I think I heard you say you're here in the state of Arizona, through Senate Bill 1453, community colleges were just given the authority a couple months ago to begin to offer the four-year baccalaureate. And that's really exciting for us because we think that there's a population of students that would really want to earn that four-year baccalaureate through us. We don't think that it's mission creep on our part because our promise is to focus in on areas of career and technical education and to not duplicate what our university or partners are doing. So you probably will never find us offering a degree in history or English, for example, but you're going to see us offer a degree in nursing or one of the allied health programs or something related to IT, police, fire, science. I said we wouldn't duplicate, but teacher education is another one that we will likely offer a four-year baccalaureate in, just because there's so much demand. And we understand the importance of having educators and administrators in our classrooms and in our workspaces that reflect our communities. But the fact of the matter is, as I look out my window and I see the West Valley, I've got people who live in the West Valley who are the community, but can't drive the 30, 40 miles to get to a downtown campus at ASU or GCU to be a teacher. They just simply can't make the drive, can't afford to do the drive. But I've got a community college campus that is a walking distance from them, and that might encourage them to become a teacher. They'll be a teacher in their local area, and guess what? They're going to reflect our community because that's where they came from. And I think that's one of the things that we can do from a community college perspective in helping K-12 is to help them ensure that they've got qualified teachers and teachers that reflect their communities.
Yeah, let me just end by saying, I love that. I'm not in Arizona. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, but I've worked with University of Phoenix and Arizona State and Grand Canyon out there a lot. And the community colleges were always pushing to get their piece of the pie and their voice in the conversation about how we change what the college experience looks like. We're seeing that happen so much more across the country now in states like Maryland and Texas, and incidentally, places like New York and Michigan, who don't want to see what they believe is a breakdown of the four-year institution, are now offering these satellite campuses all over the states, which really are community colleges. So you said it right, Stephen, when you said you have board members and policymakers who are saying, we want to go after the PhDs, but that's because our schooling system has led people to believe that anything other than the PhD experience is much more watered down, when in fact, a lot of students that are graduating from these community colleges have targeted expertise for what it is the EdTech world needs them to do. So I'm Dr. Kathy Owens-Oliver. Thank you for this space.
On January of 2020, Dr. Stephen R. Gonzalez assumed the role of interim chancellor for the Maricopa County Community College District, one of the largest community college systems in the nation, serving nearly 200,000 students with the support of 10,000 faculty and staff across 10 colleges. He has nearly 25 years of instructional and administrative experience in higher education. He served as the 8th president of Gateway Community College, one of the 10 Maricopa Community Colleges. Dr. Gonzalez has served on the National Community College Hispanic Council as an executive board member, the Community College Survey of Student Engagement as a member of the Board of Directors, the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, the National Institute of Staff and Organizational Development, and the Arizona Post-Secondary Education Board of Commissioners. He has recently published an article in the New Directions for Community Colleges Journal. This episode was recorded live on Clubhouse. Check us out at the FutureX Tribe. It was produced by the FutureX Tribe, Beyond Academics, and BNEX Global. Executive Director and Chief Moderator, Matt Alex. Edited by BNEX Global Media. Our music is by David Cutter. I'm Hector H. Lopez. We'll see you next time as we continue our discussions with the higher ed changemakers on the FutureX podcast.